It's Monday, the 15th of February, 2016. Welcome back. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Funk Boudi. My name is Josh Lloyd. If you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Funk Boudi, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. It is pretty straightforward. Also, a big thanks, obviously, to the guys at Moneyball.com.au, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you are in Australia or New Zealand, please make sure you're checking out Moneyball and playing on their, if you want to, of course, for all your DFS action. All right, this is a special edition podcast. I'm not on my own today, as I am for so many other podcasts. I am joined by two luminaries of the fantasy basketball world, the team over at Basketball Monster, Kyle McEwen and Matt Smith. Kyle, how are you first?
You're never alone, Josh.
I'm alone in person, but in spirit, I know you're always with me.
Yes. I think Matt and I both. I'm good, man. Thank you so much for having me on to talk about the basketballs with you.
No problem. And Matt, that's good to have you back on.
It's good to be back. It's not very often where the three of us get to sit down and talk fantasy, so this makes a nice change.
When was the last time when we did the a mock draft at the start of the season?
I think so. Yeah. We had 8 or 10 of us in it. That was cool.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to try and negotiate all those different people in that podcast. But it's the last time we've gotten on air. Obviously, we're speaking through DMs and stuff like that. But actually, to get on board and talk in a podcast form, it's the first time that we've done that in quite a while. Now, this is not the usual podcast, obviously, because I'm not going to go back and discuss the All-Star Game and give our fantasy rankings or values or what do you do with what happened to the All-Star Game, because that means nothing in the end. But before I get into what we're actually talking about, which is Dynasty Leagues, I assume both you guys watched the dunk contest on Saturday night?
Right the roof, yep.
Matty?
Correct.
Now,
yes.
I want to get a poll here. Who won, because in the end that doesn't matter. What was the best dunk to you guys? Matt?
My favorite dunk was the one where Aaron Gordon put the ball under both legs, just sitting in the air right next to the rim there. Yeah, that one to me, that's arguably the best dunk I've ever seen. That was incredible.
Kyle?
Ditto.
Yep. Me too. I couldn't believe it. I said the same thing when I was watching. That's the best dunk I've ever seen. I couldn't believe that he cleared that guy's head by that much. I mean, Kyle were talking before about how tall that mascot could possibly be, because mascots are always a little bit taller than a regular person because they've got that extra padding and foam at the top of their head. So he's not just a regular sized person, the mascot. He's jumped over him, cleared him completely, sitting down, head at the rim. It was just amazing. But I'm sure most people have seen it and would agree that, well, maybe they wouldn't agree, because I know when I was talking to my son, his favorite dunk was the spinning hoverboard dunk, which I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed as well. But there was a lot of interesting things happening during that dunk contest.
When you try to describe what Aaron Gordon did during the spinning hoverboard dunk, that dunk might be more impressive, because it was a one-handed grab the ball with his only open hand while he's got his other hand resting on his head. Who was that? Was that J.R. Ryder? Who was that?
It was Karl Malone.
Karl Malone did that? Okay.
Yeah, not in a dunk contest. That's the Karl Malone signature. Look at me. I've got my hand behind my head dunk.
But the spinning on the hoverboard, grabbing the ball with one hand, doing the windmill while spinning a 180, like that might be more impressive than the jumping 7 feet high and going underneath both legs thing. Like, that might be harder to have done, I guess is what I'm saying.
They all just looked crazy good. And even Levine's ones look easier, because he just floats through the air. Like, it's like he's not jumping, and he's going so slowly it feels through the air. I don't know if you guys get that impression as well, Matt. When you look at him, he just looks like he's just like literally floating.
Yeah, it's Zach LaVine is effortless, what he does. Just that takeoff, it just, like you said, floating, it's just effortless, just incredible. I would have liked to have seen Aaron Gordon dunk the ball while riding the hoverboard. That, to me, that would have been impressive.
Jump off the hoverboard, dunk it, land back on the hoverboard, and then keep going.
Yeah, that's, keep going that, and just ride out of the stadium.
It's in the bag of tricks for next season. Yep.
I don't know if you guys saw those consumer reports and stuff and how the hoverboards were like banned from airlines and all that stuff over the holiday season. I was actually just hoping the damn thing was going to catch on fire.
That happened here. That they're talking of banning it here. That happened in someone's room and burned someone's house down. The hoverboard, they were charging it, caught on fire, the house burnt down. So, yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago back here. Matt, you might not have seen. I think that was a Melbourne-only story. But, yeah, standard news story. Lord, these things are a danger. They should be tested. Like, that's because you bought a 20-buck one from China, mate. Like, yeah. I mean, you might want to check the insulation on it before you buy it. But anyway, I apologize if that man's listening to this podcast. The chances of that are pretty low. But the people who are listening to this podcast, you don't want to hear hoverboards catching on fire stories. Maybe you do. I'm sure you want to hear dynasty talk, and that's what we are here to do. It's an area of fantasy basketball that, A, doesn't get as much coverage as what it probably should, and I'm trying to address that here and throughout the year. It's a more dynasty sort of stuff, and I try to incorporate as much as I can throughout the podcast during the season. We're going to be talking dynasty leagues, and not only is it underappreciated, but it's also one of the more fun ways to do it. Now, I know that I'm in a dynasty league with Kyle. I'm in one with Matt. It brings an extra level to things, especially in terms of trade negotiations and drafting. There's so many more things that go into these sort of leagues. And it is, I would say, it's a more fun way to do it if you are especially invested in fantasy basketball like we are. And like I assume the majority of you listening are, it becomes almost like a 12-month of the year endeavor. Is looking at your team, negotiating trades, all that sort of stuff. Matt, is that how you find it?
Sorry, say that question again. I was just going through our dynasty notes. I wasn't listening to a word you said then.
Cool. Well, I'll go to Kyle first, and then you can listen to Kyle's answer, and you can see if you can construct a question out of that. But now, basically what I was saying is, do you find it a more fun way to play? Because it in essence, it stretches a league out for 12 months of the year with all the different thoughts of trading and drafting and all your different strategies that you can go through.
I know personally for me, I love the fact that you can watch FIBA basketball in the summer. You can watch the summer league in the summer, and it doesn't mean nothing. It means something because you're constantly evaluating how your players are progressing and what they're going to do next season. So being able to evaluate them through summer league play is really exciting, especially for some of these dynasty league players who don't always get run in the regular NBA season, but who might be stashed on your team and who you're waiting to kind of step into a bigger role the next season.
I agree with that completely. Matt, what's your take on it? How do you view? Okay, have you played? Look, I know you're in the Big Red Rock Dynasty League this year. How many others have you played in? Was this your first foray into dynasty basketball?
Yeah, I've played keeper leagues. This is my first big dynasty league, and we've got salaries involved and contracts and the whole work. So, and already being one season in, or not even a whole season in, we've already got two distinct groups, the contenders and the people planning for next year and tanking. So that's
I'm in the first group, and then everybody else is in the second group. Yeah.
As always, Kyle, big shout out to Kevin Lappin in the Red Rock Dynasty League, who has gone full Philadelphia 76ers and I think he's got 11 first round draft choices for the next three seasons. So he's accumulating some fair draft picks in that league. Now, guys, we're talking Dynasty, but before we start talking Dynasty, we need to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and that is today's sponsor, which is SeatGeek. If you're looking to buy tickets to a game or to sell tickets that you can't use, you need to check out SeatGeek. It's the smartest way to buy and sell tickets for your favorite sports team. If you're ever looking for a ticket to an NBA game, to a hockey game, to college basketball game, you go on SeatGeek, I'm almost sure you're going to find the ticket for cheaper than what you'd find it anywhere else. It pulls all the buying and selling options from other ticket sites into one place to save you time. SeatGeek also knows the fair market value of your tickets and shows you the best deals to help you find underpriced seats. If you have tickets that you can't use, SeatGeek will also help you price your tickets on their site so that you can quickly sell them to another fan. SeatGeek has the lowest fees of any ticket site out there and always shows you the full price up front. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code, which you can see on the screen if you're watching now. It's REDROCK. It's one word. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code REDROCK today. It's very straightforward, and I assume both you guys have entered the promo code REDROCK and got your free $20 back on your first purchase. I'm going to assume yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course. That's the only way. It's the only way you get on this show is if you've used that promo code REDROCK, and that's how you get a seat at the table. You use that code, and then we'll maybe talk about giving you a microphone. Now, we've got a few things to go through here in terms of Dynasty. We could talk, I reckon, for 10 hours. We're not going to. I hope not anyway, because otherwise, Kyle, I'm sure you'll be pretty tired for tomorrow. But there's lots of things we can cover and talk about. We're going to go through a few things here. The first one is, and it was something that was brought up by one of the users on the Basketball Monster forums. It was just a question. Put up a few names, this player or this player, and give it a couple of reasons why. I added a couple more of my own to that list. But let's go. We'll start with you, Kyle. The first one, D'Angelo Russell or Andrew Wiggins? And the guy on the forum specified it's going to be for an 8-category dynasty league, but you can make it for whatever you want. D'Angelo Russell?
No, I mean, eight-category D'Angelo Russell or Andrew Wiggins.
Yep.
Based on what we know right now, I think Andrew Wiggins is going to be great. I think he's going to be a better real basketball player than D'Angelo Russell, because you know that you can count on Andrew Wiggins to actually give a crap on the defensive side of the ball. But for fantasy purposes, what we're seeing out of D'Angelo Russell right now, when he wasn't playing point guard earlier in the season and he wasn't getting a lot of shots, he was going out and getting rebounds. So he finds ways to get statistics for fantasy, even when he may not be in the best position or when he may have a different role than what we know he's going to have going forward. And going forward, we know D'Angelo Russell is a great passer. We know he's a great shooter. So I've been encouraged by the fact that he's getting steals this year. When he has an opportunity to handle the ball, he's getting decent number of assists. I think fantasy-wise, you pick D'Angelo Russell, even though you may know that Andrew Wiggins is going to be the better real-life basketball player.
Matt, how do you look at it?
Oh, I 100% agree with Kyle, and he hit the nail on the head there when he said that Wiggins is going to be a better real-life player than he is fantasy player. We know Wiggins can score at will when he likes, but it's going to be those other stats. As Kyle said, the ability to contribute and assist, threes and steals, that are eventually going to give D'Angelo Russell more long-term fantasy value.
Okay, now I am not a massive Andrew Wiggins fan. Plenty of people listening to the show would have heard me talk about him during the season, but I think that he does have room to grow in those other areas. It might not happen straight away. It's not happening this year, clearly. Didn't happen last year. Might not happen next year, but I think that he'll be a guy who can start to hit a three a game. And sometimes it takes these players who are actual good physical basketball players, good defenders. When you watch me, you know, this guy gives a shit when he's defending. It takes them 3 or 4 years to actually turn that into statistics. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's a good example of that. He's a guy that was a really good defender, but it never turns into defensive numbers. It didn't turn into steal numbers. We see guys like Damian Lillard and Reggie Jackson, who aren't great defenders, but their steal numbers rise from 0.7 to 1.1. It doesn't seem like much, but it's a big deal, and in fantasy, that makes a big difference. And I think that Wiggins can get to that one steal and he can get to 1-3 a game. And how easy is it to find a bloke that scores 20 points? That's the part where I go, that's going to sway me towards Wiggins. And plus, I just haven't... Kyle, what you said about Russell's perfect in terms of his rebounding ability, that's great. But I'm just convinced I'm not convinced that he's athletically up to the challenge enough. So I would take...
Okay, Wiggins. But there's situations, though, too. Next year, Wiggins is going to be the second option behind Cat.
That's true.
And he's going to remain the second option for forever. Next year, D'Angelo has an opportunity to be the number one option on that Lakers team that's going to suck, and he's just going to be able to do whatever the hell he wants because he's going to have a better coach.
How do you get a better coach than Byron Scott?
Good one, bro.
But you are right. Look, there is a bigger opportunity for Russell, because we're going to talk about Karl Anthony Towns, I'm sure, a bit in this podcast. He is going to be, well, he already is. He is, I don't even have enough words to describe how good this guy is going to be from a fantasy point of view and from a real life point of view. He is something else. But I actually think that role suits Wiggins better, where he doesn't have to be number one. I think he's a perfect number two guy. And I think that's probably actually ends up better for him, that he doesn't have to be number one and he can go around and actually, you know, maybe take a bit of a load off offensively and do some of these other things and be a guy who can maybe focus a bit more on his rebounding or his passing, because, you know, by next year, Towns is going to be just destroying people.
Well, I mean, and Towns' game is going to open up Wiggins' game more and more as time goes on and they learn to play with each other, because essentially they're each going to have one half of the floor when they want to. Towns is either going to post up in the block and he's going to be able to pass out of it to a cutting Wiggins, or you're going to have Towns stretching the floor with his ability to shoot three-pointers and deep twos, which allows Wiggins to attack the rack more as well. Fascinating team going forward. Oh. It's funny that I was actually arguing against Wiggins for the whole D'Angelo Russell versus Andrew Wiggins argument, but like in the preseason when we would talk, Josh, I would be defending Andrew Wiggins, and I've drafted Andrew Wiggins in tons of leagues because I especially like him in his potential in rotisserie leagues for his percentages to continue to grow as he gets better and better. I mean, the guy's still 20. He doesn't turn 21 until like another 10 days or so. He's a young guy, and like you pointed out, I do think there's a lot of potential for him to get tons of threes later in his career and to improve in the steals categories, which he's already up to 0.8 this year. And he still gets you half a block too, which is pretty darn nice.
Half a block's great. He gets to 1.1 steals. Like that's perfect. Like that's what you need. And then 20 points on top of that. And he could go further. If he had some threes, all these things. Look, plenty of players couldn't shoot three. Kyle Lowry couldn't hit a three when he first started in the NBA. It took him about 6 years to hit a three. And Chris Bosh couldn't hit threes. And obviously he's a different player, but these things don't come all of a sudden. So yeah, we did have this discussion in the offseason, you know, plenty of times about what Wiggins' potential is. But if we keep talking for 20 minutes on each one of these, we're going to be here all night. Let's go to the next one. Matt, we'll start with you. Miles Turner or the internet's boyfriend, Bobby Portis?
Yeah, both of these guys are going to be really good long-term prospects. But for me, it's Miles Turner and his ability to put up these big block numbers. Now, his per 36 numbers this season already are at 18 points, 9 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks. So we'll eventually see him as an elite guy in that blocks category. We know he can score, and he's already pretty efficient from the field and also the free throw line. If he can get his free throw percentage up to around 70%, he's going to be extremely valuable, especially for a non-punt free throw option. So love both of these guys, but I'm taking Miles Turner.
With his free throws, his free throw percentage this season has been a real surprise, considering he was an 80-plus guy at Texas last year. He's only at 65 this season, and I agree with you. He's going to put up some big numbers, I reckon. Kyle, I'll get your take on it first, and then I'll give you my overall impression. But Miles Turner or Mr. Portis?
Miles Turner, he's going. You look at this guy's shot, it's somewhere in the realm of like LaMarcus Aldridge, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, when you look at how fluid it is. The sky's the limit for Miles Turner. There's... Yeah. You love his blocks totals. You know he's going to end up hitting three-pointers eventually. He's going to shoot good percentages, it looks. You're not really worried about what he's doing right now necessarily in a small sample size on field goal percentage or free throw percentage because he projects to be great in both of those categories.
Yeah, it's straightforward to me. It's clearly Turner. I know that everyone is, you know, massively in love with Bobby Portis, and I say it all the time. I like him too, but he's proven nothing so far. And he's going to be good, but Turner's got the ability to be different, like different good. Like we don't see big men who hit threes, block shots, and shoot 85% from the free throw line. Like that skill set, apart from Carl Anthony Towns, doesn't exist, or even he can do it as well. But there's not many guys that can do that, and Turner can fit into that group. He's going to score, he's going to rebound, and I don't know. To me, he's...
What is Portis, though? Portis came out and he was putting up some ludicrous numbers at the start of the season in limited action, and it got everybody excited. And then as he came back and he kind of got back into the rotation a little bit over the last month or so, there really hasn't been the same kind of great per-minute production that gets you drooling. So
no, I feel like the league has figured him out to a degree. Like, you know how people come in the first time and go, who is this guy? Like, what is he doing? How do we defend him? He's just staring us down and running the court, and we don't have much of an idea. But now that he plays a bigger role, the other teams go, well, we know what to do with this guy. And he'll grow into that and be able to beat that to an extent. But I think that initial explosion was like, what is this guy doing to us?
But even if Bobby Portis got 30 minutes a game right now, what would he average? Would it be like 14 points and 7 rebounds
he's per 36
maybe a block a game?
He's per
36 numbers for this season are 15, 10, 1 steal, 1 block, and the 1.7 threes is the big kicker. But to me, with that 15, 10, block and steal, the high-energy hustle sort of guy, to me that's Kenneth Faried. His field goal percentage is at 45, free throw percentage is at 71, so that really needs a lot of work. So
He can hit threes, though.
How high he can go on that steals and blocks numbers.
Yeah, no, Kenneth Faried's a good example because of the rebounding numbers, the energy guys. But he's hit, you know, per 36 half a three a game. That's obviously something that Faried can't do. That's something, and he's taking, you know, 1.7 threes a game per 36 minutes. That's a difference. But you're right, he doesn't have that sort of game-changing ability where I think Turner, Turner can go and average 3 blocks and 1 3 a game and 9 rebounds and 17, 18 points at his peak and hit 85% of his free throws and be just a complete monster in almost every single category. And that's why
Turner could be a better Serge Ibaka.
I'm looking at Bobby Portis and I think he's Andre Blotch. Like he's a cardboard DeMarcus Cousins.
Okay, interesting. I like the Andre Blatch comparison. But I think he'll be a starter, Portis, but I don't think he'll be an all-star caliber guy. I'm not sure saying that Turner's going to be an all-star, but Turner is more likely to be an all-star than what Portis is. That's just that slight difference between them. The next one, Kyle, we'll swing it back to you. Jahlil Okafor or Willie Cauley-Stein?
Jahlil Okafor. Mainly because Jahlil has an evident offensive game that is going to play well in the NBA. What you don't know is if Jahlil Okafor is actually going to have a defensive game or if he's just going to be the next Greg Monroe. Whereas with Willie Cauley-Stein, you like that he's putting up some of those Nerlens Noel type of stats, but is he going to be good enough? Is he going to develop much more considering he's a little bit older than most rookies? And can he really be a consistent option on offense at all? I'm going to take Jahlil Okafor well over Willie Cauley-Stein.
Matt?
Yep, 3 from 3. The two things that have surprised me and probably most of the league about Okafor in his rookie season have been his block rate, currently 1.2 blocks per game, and his free throw percentage at 68%, which we were thinking he's going to be a punt free throw percentage guy. So the scoring and field goal efficiency are there. If he can build on that block and free throw percentage, he's going to be a lot more valuable fantasy player than I thought and a lot more valuable than Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see Okafor have a massive rise in his field goal percentage. He's only at 49% now, but I attribute that to the start of a rookie's career field goal percentage drop, which basically hits every single rookie, and he'll be a 55-56% guy from the field. The free throws, Matt, is it 68, which is okay, but if those attempts start to go up, is it 3.6 per game this season, but if they go up to 5 or 6... then that becomes a problem without him improving. Now, he's shown some signs of improvement this season, but if those attempts go up too much and he doesn't improve, then it's a big drag. But you're right, he was a guy that I was anticipating to be like a field goal percentage higher than free throw percentage guy, and he definitely hasn't been that guy so far. He's a good scorer. The blocks have been impressive. He's going to do nothing else in other areas, and I don't rate him that highly as a prospect, but I just have Cauley-Stein as a much lower prospect. I'm not sure what Cauley-Stein's going to be able to do. That. What is Kyle doing?
Is that the bar?
Making coffee?
Yeah, it sounded like you were mixing a drink. Cool. Anyway.
I'm making coffee. Yeah. You guys want some?
Yeah, thanks. That'd be great. Just transport it through Chronosphere. Cauley-Stein. Defensive numbers is going to be his specialty, but the upside limitation on him, and he's actually a worse free throw shooter than what Okafor is anyway, so I'm not sure where his ceiling actually is. And the point you brought up about him being older is it's significant. When you're talking 3 or 4 years older, it's a big difference for these younger guys. Matt, the next one, Stanley Johnson or Justice Winslow? Probably don't really need to go to Kyle on that one, but we will anyway, but we'll start with you.
Justice Winslow, Stanley Johnson. I'm a Pistons fan for anybody who doesn't know, and I'm just going to say it right now so that people understand how important I think Stanley Johnson's going to be in the NBA. Imagine a hybrid of James Harden's offense and Kawhi Leonard's defense.
Kyle's not overstating it at all. He actually believes, he told me that a couple of weeks ago. I think you told me that close to the start of the season as well. Yeah, you truly do believe in Stan. But Matt, for a more impartial view, Stanley Johnson or Justice Winslow?
Man, Kyle's had too much caffeine already. And look, we're getting a whole tour of the house here while we're going. It's good. Stanley Johnson for me. We've seen bits of him this year already, and they look really good. But we know 3-and-D wings are quite valuable, especially the really good ones in fantasy. Guys like Trevor Ariza, Damari Carroll, Jay Crowder. But yeah, Stanley Johnson is not only this season, but moving forward, Kyle's putting me off here pressing his buttons. Hopefully we see more of Justice Winslow towards the end of this season than next season if Luol Deng's not around. But yeah, right now I'm taking Stanley Johnson easily.
But how much more does Winslow need to play? He's already averaging 28 minutes a game. Like, if Luol Deng goes, what does he get, an extra 2 minutes? Yes, his game will improve, and it has improved recently as well. But I think that we're seeing him, if we look at the season-long rankings for these guys, Johnson's at 219 and Winslow's at 221. Right, but that's with 4 minutes difference in playing time. Johnson at 24 minutes, Winslow at 28. Now, Winslow might go to 30 minutes, he might go to 32 minutes, but Johnson can also go to 32 or 33 minutes. And I think that will easily, you know, surpass him, because he's going to be able to do more offensively. He's going to be able to handle the ball more than Winslow and create, and maybe not a huge amount of assists, but 2.5 to 3 assists is not crazy for him. As he becomes a ball handler more in the second unit as well, which I know, Kyle, that the Pistons want him to do as well. It's just, I think that they're always going to be compared to each other because they played the same position. They went two spots different, and they were going to pick, you know, I can't believe they passed on Winslow to pick Johnson. So these guys are going to be compared for the next 4 or 5 years. But for fantasy purposes, I would rather have Johnson than Winslow because I think he's just got more all-round ability in his game. Kyle, you got anything else to add on your boyfriend here?
Both these guys are going to be very good. Stanley Johnson just has more of an all-around offensive game. He scores more confidently, more easily in a roundabout way. I don't think we're really seeing Justice Winslow take many three-point shots right now, whereas Stanley Johnson willingly chucks them as they come to him. So I think you're going to see Justice Winslow get plenty of assists as time goes on. He's obviously rebounding like a madman in certain games right now. And the defensive stats, I think those will come in bulk for both these guys because you watch the way they play the game and how just focused they are on the defensive end. I think you're just going to see it kind of come along a little bit slower maybe.
Yeah, Winslow is shooting 26% from three this year, which is obviously, Johnson's only at 32, but 26 to 32 is a big difference, but you're right. He's going to get better, and it's going to be one of those things. And when you see a young player as a good defender or an exceptional defender and it doesn't translate into stats for fantasy, just wait 3 years. Wait 3 or 4 years. By the end of their rookie contract, that it will start to develop into defensive numbers. Not many rookies come out and go, I'm averaging 2 steals a game. As good as they might look, Dante Exum was, such a big defensive guy last season for the Jazz and had such a big on-court impact, but it didn't translate into anything. But eventually, it's going to come for these guys, and it's going to happen for Winslow. He's going to be a 1.5 to 1.8 sort of steals range guy, a big rebounder for his position as well, and he'll score a little bit, but I think that Johnson can do more in other areas. That's another clean sweep there. The next one, I reckon we might have a bit more debate here. Kyle, Nikola Mirotic or Jabari Parker?
I think Nikola Mirotic is going to give you more stats, more, he's going to give you 3-pointers, whereas Jabari right now is just not shooting them. So it's really, what does Jabari become over the years? Does he start to get defensive stats? If there's something you absolutely love about Jabari right now, he's efficient. He doesn't take dumb shots for the most part. He's had a bad stretch or two, but the guy's consistently shooting over 50% right now in what many people would consider still his rookie season.
Well, he's at 40. And he's at 49% for the year in coming back from an ACL. So that's, it's fantastic.
Right. I mean, for rotisserie leagues, there's been a good argument for owning Jabari most of the season because of his good field goal percentage. Even though his free throw percentage isn't, great, it's not so bad that it's going to kill you. And you just love the potential that's there for this guy. Josh, I know probably the most exciting thing about Jabari has been his dunks. It's when he gets an open lane, he goes in a straight line, which doesn't speak too well about his potential to produce going forward, because when you're talking about guys who take advantage of only going in straight lines, you start to think of Jeff Green. But I personally love Jabari's potential moving forward. I love that he's much younger than Nikola Mirotic. For fantasy reasons, though, if Jabari is going to have the same potential as Nikola Mirotic, especially in head-to-head leagues where you might be punting the percentages, Jabari is going to have to start putting up stats in a more diverse way,
Matt,
at some point.
Matt, I get the feeling I know which way you're going to go. We had Kyle's boyfriend before with Stan Johnson. This one is definitely one of the guys with the final roses in the ceremony. Nikola Mirotic or Jabari Parker?
Yeah, I've been one of Mirotic's biggest supporters, and I'm going to stick with him here. As Kyle said, like, we know Parker can score, but can he do these other things in different categories to be that top-end talent, I'm not so convinced. I think he might be like a poor man's Carmelo Anthony, whereas Mirotić has a unique fantasy game in terms of his threes, his steals, his blocks, rebounds, his high free throw percentage. We were having a lengthy Twitter debate around Mirotić in the off-season around his game and where it can go, not just you and I, Josh, but others. And in terms of his upside and his ceiling, like, it's Dirk Nowitzki-like in terms of what he can do. So I'm not giving up on Mirotić despite this poor season. Next season, with Pau Gasol and Yoel Kanoa maybe not being there on the Chicago roster, it could really open up playing time for Nikola Mirotić. So, yeah, I'm not giving up on him yet.
Now, we say he's had a poor season, and that is true to an extent. We had him really high in our rankings to start the season because we anticipated he was going to get 30 minutes a night, which he did for the first week or so of the season. We thought that he wouldn't get worse. We thought that he'd, you know, at least maintain the same levels, but he got worse in categories. And, you know, that stuff happens. But for as bad as he's been, he's still ranked 115th on the season. Like, that's not a complete, you know, write-off. It's not great, and it's only 24 minutes a game. But he can do so many things in so many different areas. He can be a triple one guy. He can average a steal, a block, and a three-pointer. He's a better rebounder than Jabari Parker is. He can be a real focal point of this team offensively as well, especially when Powell goes. That they're gonna, well, who else are they gonna dump it down to? Taj Gibson? Like, someone needs to score down low for this team. He's a better rebounder. He's a better scorer. He's a better shooter from long range, is more likely to shoot from long range and hit those threes. He's going to get more steals. He's going to block more shots than Jabari. A lot of people are going to be turned off Mirotić from this season. And Kyle, the point you brought up earlier on about the age is a factor. But now is the perfect time in a dynasty league to try and buy low on Mirotić, I think, because I don't think we're going to see him get much worse than this. And we probably won't see Parker be worse than this either, but I think the ceiling of Mirotić is higher than what Jabari's is. Would you say that's fair?
I don't know if I would say that their ceilings are higher, because when you try to dissect what Jabari is going to become someday, you're talking about, I mean, the most common comparison that I hear people say and that I make is Paul Pierce. So if you're talking about somebody who's going to score in the mid-20s and have a diverse line across the way, I don't know that Nikola Mirotić down the road is actually going to be better. But for right now, yeah, I think the better investment or the higher upside right now and in the short term, the next year or two, which really that's something maybe we should talk about. For a dynasty, how much further do you look down? Because for me, you shouldn't look past next year in most respects.
I reckon, like, two years is about all you can go, because everything changes so quickly. You can't go too far in advance. And that's something we'll talk about, I think, when we talk drafting as well, is that you can't, it's real tough to go that far in advance, because who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? And you can't project things 6 months out, let alone 4 years out.
Yeah.
The next one, Matt. Joe Young or Campaign?
The Campaign is on track. He, I love his fantasy game. He's got all the assets of being an elite fantasy point guard. The only question we have around Campaign is how quickly will he get that opportunity to take on a starting point guard role.
I'm glad you brought it up.
Currently behind Russell Westbrook. So it's Campaign, but he doesn't want to be stuck as that sixth man off the bench, Dennis Schroeder type point guard for the next 3, 4, 5 years. That'll limit him. So it's really going to depend how quickly he can get that opportunity.
I just don't trust the Thunder not to turn Cameron Payne into the next James Harden, into the next Jeremy Lamb, into the next Reggie Jackson. Like, they're going to end up pigeonhole this kid because they don't want to slide Westbrook over to shooting guard, or they don't want to start him at shooting guard because, I mean, they got Deion Waiters there, you know, or they got Tabo Cephalosha, or they got Andre Roberson, all these bums. I don't know, man. So from that perspective, I look at Joe Young, and these guys are both exciting as far as what their potential is to
like
be kind of modern-day Lou Williams or better, but hopefully better than Lou Williams. Certainly Cameron Payne with his shooting percentages, but I'm really worried about Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, if I had to pick one of these two guys who I think could step into a bigger role quicker, I would say Joe Young, just also because he plays behind George Hill, who's not nearly as good as people want to pretend. And George Hill gets hurt, man, just weird ways, you know?
I agree with you completely on all of that, Cole, because to me, looking at the way they play and the talent, Payne is clearly the better option to me. But when will it be realized? Is it in 3 years' time? Like, there is a situation in my head where I could see that Joe Young starts for the Pacers next year. Like, George Hill is fine, but he's not, let's take it to the next level sort of player. He's not that sort of guy. He's not a star. Monte Ellis is not your point guard of the future. Joe Young showed what he can do. And Joe Young's per 36 numbers look great. 16 points, a 3, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.6 steals. Now, they're not as great as what Payne's are. Payne's a top 35 guy by his per 36 numbers. You know, 16, 5, and 6, 2 steals, 2.5 threes, even 0.4 blocks. And percentages that have got massive room for growth, already shooting 44% from the field. Payne looks like the winner, but that might be 4 years down the track before he actually realizes it. But he has got, he is going to be, if he gets a starting job, he will be a top 50 fantasy player with ceiling above that. He has been a guy that, before the season started, though, I've been right on him. And I'm actually pissed that I couldn't get him into the Red Rock Dynasty League onto my team. I don't remember who got him, but they probably outbid me there as I was going for more a win now approach. But that's the concern with Payne, is that when does it happen? If Westbrook goes in free agency after 2017, then it's all on for him. Like, then it's Operation Campaign time. But if Westbrook re-signs, then where does he go? After his rookie contract, he gets traded, and he gets the James Harden, Reggie Jackson treatment. Who knows? It's definitely, like, it depends on the way your team looks at it. But we could be seeing Joe Young as a top 100 guy next year, and Payne probably won't be. The next couple ones are ones that I added in, so they weren't part of that Basketball Monster question that guy posed. Rod Hood or Devin Booker? Matt, I'll start with you. You're the Suns man here. Rod Hood or Devin Booker?
Yeah, love both of these guys, and I'd gladly have either one on a dynasty roster, but I'm going to stick with my boy Booker. We know both guys can score, hit threes, but I think Booker's going to be able to do a little bit more defensively in terms of his steals, and then also he's shown size that he can handle and distribute the ball already. And now there's been a lot of comparisons between Booker and Klay Thompson, but I think fantasy-wise, Booker can turn more into like a Bradley Beal and hand out those 3, 4, 5 dimes a game, which I think will boost his value. So I'm taking Devin Booker.
Kyle?
Booker's the youngest kid in the NBA right now. Hood is 23. They're both freaking awesome. They're both having great breakout campaigns right now. There's issues with both. You know, you can make an argument that despite Hood coming out right now and looking like he's going to be a 20-point scorer per game the whole rest of the way, Alec Burks is still going to come back, and he's going to disrupt that situation a little bit. I think Hood still gets his minutes. If somebody's going to lose minutes once Alec Burks gets back, I think it's going to be more of those fringe rotation guys. I think it's going to be Trey Burke. I think it's going to be Howell Meadow. But the Devin Booker situation, I think we all look at it and we feel like he's going to become the number one option there. But you still got Eric Bledsoe coming back next year, and you still got Brandon Knight there. So it's just hard to know what that team's going to become. I love both these guys, and I think if there's one thing I'm going to take away from the statement that Matt started out with, it's that I would be happy to own either of these guys in Dynasty going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Booker, I thought, was going to be a points and threes sort of guy, but he's added more to his game. But what you said, Matt, about him being able to, you know, handle the ball, that's what Hood's doing that already. Like, Hood is already handling the ball. And I had in the last podcast, which if you haven't listened to it, I do encourage you to go and check it out. When I had Joe Ingles from the Utah Jazz on the show, we talked about Rod Hood for quite a while. And he said that he thinks that he was, you know, a steal of that draft last year. And I said, look, he's probably a top three player from that draft. They said as soon as he came in to the team, they said this guy is got a special talent. And all it took was for him to get over that injury before he started to show it last season. And they've got massive high hopes for him. I do not think he loses any sort of role when Burks come back. It's going to be, like you said, Kyle, Neto and Trey Burke who lose. And guys, even like, you know, Chris Johnson as well, who's been playing some at the two as well, they're not taking anything away from Hood. He is key to what this team does. They don't need a point guard when he's out there and when Gordon Hayward's out there because they just handle the ball. If Neto comes up, just gives it to him and goes, look, guys, you just do what you need to do. And that is a real key part to this team. Plus, they've got so many other and ball handlers as well, that, you know, Ingles comes in and does it. Burks can come in and do it as well. These guys that can handle the ball, they don't need a point guard. So Trey Burke and Hal Neto, like, forget about it. It's just going to be these hybrid 6'8", 6'7", wing players who just run the offense for him. And I really like what Hood can do. I would take him over Booker, even with that age gap that you mentioned, Kyle, which is a 4-year age gap. It's significant. But I think that Hood's ceiling is higher than Booker's at this point.
Oh, man, I don't know. Because even you look at the last 5 games, Booker's averaging 3.8 assists per game, bro.
Yeah, that's true. But he's also Booker but as you mentioned, how's he going to get those minutes moving forward? Like, is he going to play 40 minutes a game next season and the season after with Bledsoe and Knight both there?
Knight's gone. I mean,
and you've also got to factor in
Sonny
Weems
as well.
I don't
know what the Suns are thinking, but I mean, I don't know who do you take, because Bledsoe's obviously better than Knight. Knight, I think what people don't understand is if you don't watch enough Phoenix Suns games, or if you didn't watch Knight on the Pistons or on the Bucks. This guy makes mistakes at the worst times. Like, it'll be the end of the... There were back-to-back games this year. Phoenix lost down... Well, I think they won one of them, but they almost lost it down the line because Brandon Knight's always turning the ball over in, like, the last 30 seconds of the game. It's absurd how unclutch this kid is at times. And I just... I hope Phoenix realizes that it's Bledsoe and it's Booker going forward. And hopefully they get rid of Bledsoe too, because that dude's knee is just—he's the next Brandon Roy to me.
Yeah, it's not looking good for him at the moment. Let's get on to the next couple, which are a little bit deeper cuts. Kyle, we'll start with you. Markel Brown, and if people need to know who he plays for the Brooklyn Nets, or Josh Richardson of the Miami Heat. This is deep shit here. We're talking about guys who are ranked. I'd have to check. I reckon they're ranked in the 300s. Kyle, I'll let you talk while I check up their rankings. 403 for Richardson.
I've watched Markel Brown play basketball, so I know I won't own him. So I'll go with Josh Richardson.
I am completely with you. I really like Josh Richardson as well. Markel Brown is playing on a team who literally, look, yes, he's played well the last 2 games, but the people in front of him are Wayne Ellington and Bojan Bogdanovic. Yeah, not exactly stalwarts that he's struggling to push through and get a role. If you can't get a role over those two guys, then you're probably not good. And he's been playing better. He's played well the last 3 games, and he has increased that role. But when the team becomes good, but by that time, Markel Brown will be retired. By the time the Nets become good, Richardson, Deng will be gone. Wade will be gone. Yeah, he started this year already. He's played 35-plus minutes in quite a few games, and I think he's going to be really good. Matt, any thoughts on Markel and Josh?
No, I agree with both of you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Markel Brown's a free agent at the end of the season, so he may not even be, not only not on the Nets team, but he may not even be in the league. Whereas Josh Richardson's got a couple more years in Miami, and as you said, hopefully building some of those younger guys coming through. So I had Josh Richardson out of those two as well.
They really.
If you had told me we were going to waste time talking about Markel Brown before coming on the show, I wouldn't have come on.
I'll warn you in advance. Maybe the next question's going to piss you off as well. But yeah, Josh, the Heat really like Josh Richardson. They really like what he can do. The next one, Kyle, this one is one you might have some insight on, but we'll start with Matt. Darren Hilliard or Anthony Brown?
Well, this one's tough as well, because we've only seen very small amounts of both, and both guys showed in college that they can shoot the three. Hilliard's college stats... had more ability on the defensive end with his 1.3 steals, 0.4 blocks in just 27 minutes per game. So if he can transfer that to the NBA, I'm thinking he's going to have more value. I'd like to get Kyle's view on Hilliard, being that Pistons fan, and what he's seen of him so far this season.
He's a 22-year-old rookie, so he's coming in kind of more like CJ McCollum, where he's just confident out there on the court. He's not a deer in headlights. So from that perspective, you watch this Darren Hilliard kid come in and you think, okay, he's already ready. Or at least a lot more ready than you'll see like a guy like Markel Brown or something who has no talent. Darren Hilliard can score. He's good on defense. He doesn't make mistakes. Or he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So from that perspective, he's interesting going forward. I haven't watched enough Anthony Brown. And it's hard to trust a guy who's going to show up, get some extra minutes on a team that is floundering as much as the Lakers versus a playoff team like the Pistons, who have turned to Hilliard only when they needed to. and he's shown up well in those limited moments. Whether or not he actually carves out a consistent role and becomes somebody who you can, who's going to be a consistent part of a rotation going forward, I don't know. But he is definitely intriguing, and when you watch him, it feels like he belongs in the NBA.
I agree with that, Kylie. He's a guy for me. Now, Brown was a they're both the same age. I think they both came out as 22, 23-year-olds. So then both, you know, not all that young. They might only be in the league for another two or three seasons. But if I'm betting on someone to be able to carve a role, it's going to be Hilliard. He can score. He's got a definite skill set of being a guy who can score off the bench. And that can be, you know, as much as we like all the other categories, and being able to score gets you a job in the NBA. And that's the first step to being able to accumulate fantasy stats, is actually having a job in the league. And if he can do that, then yeah, that's fine. Now, Anthony Brown came in as a guy who could shoot threes. He hasn't really done it that well this season. So if you can't do it, yeah, and that's your job, and you're on the Lakers, and you've had an opportunity, and you've started games when Kobe hasn't been there. He started quite a few games, and he's shooting sub 30%. Then I'm a little bit worried for him in terms of what happens with him moving forward. The last one of these we'll go through is Kyle. We'll go with you, Mario Hezonja or Dante Exum.
Hezonja only for what hopefully would be a more diverse statistical production. Exum right now, we don't know what he's going to actually become, because as a 19-year-old rookie, he, as you talked about earlier, Josh, he didn't really put up good counting stats. He just was out there playing good defense and adhering to the team's kind of schemes. He wasn't out there collecting stats. So I would bank on Hezonja at this moment.
Matty?
Yeah, this one I'm going to disagree. I mentioned earlier that 3-and-D wings are valuable, but the good ones are valuable. They're also quite easy to find off the waiver wire. You think of someone like PJ Tucker, who's averaging 1.3 steals, nearly a 3 a game, who you can find on the waiver wire. So Mario Hezonja is going to have to do more than just get 1.5 steals and 1.5 threes to be not just fantasy relevant, but top-end fantasy relevant. And when we're comparing these guys who are...
Matty, dropped out.
And hopefully Dante Exum can turn to that top 50 sort of guy. I think Hezonja might be top 60 to top 80. So I'm going for the higher ceiling and Dante Exum, who can contribute in the assist, steals, and threes categories.
I'm going to break the tie, and I'm going to side with Kyle, and I think that Hezonja can be that guy, because I think Hezonja can actually be a ball handler as well. And he can be one of those wing players who gets you 3.5 assists. Some of the passing he was doing in that, I know it means nothing in the scheme of things, but in that rookie sophomore game were incredible. He has fantastic vision. He can score. He can get some steals, but it's going to be scoring, assists, and threes that come from Hezonja. Interesting to see what Exum does, but also look at the situation and go, okay, well, we've got Hood and we've got Hayward, who I just talked about handling the ball so much. So does Exum really ever become ball dominant like that? Or does that happen in the next 4 or 5 years? That's where I'm a little bit worried about. I still think that Exum has pretty decent upside, but Hezonja is going to, I think he's going to break out first and be a little bit more productive over the next 2 to 3 seasons.
Hang on. Hezonja is going to break out under Skiles.
I don't think Skiles is going to be there all that long.
Kyle?
I hope Skiles isn't there all that long. Although, if there's one thing I'd like to see under Skiles, it's kind of the slow marginalization of Tobias Harris, who I think sucks. Hezonja, I've read that he's going to be a good passer, that Skiles thinks that he's going to be somebody who can facilitate. So from to the point that...
He's played point guard this year.
I don't want to go too far on that. But so I think you're going to get some assists out of Hezonja going forward. I'm afraid. See, here's what I want to know about you guys. What is Dante Exum's comp? Like, who is he going, statistically, who is he going to be similar to, or game-wise, who is he going to be similar to? Because I'm worried this kid's just going to turn into, like, a Michael Carter Williams, where he doesn't put it together across the board.
I think that the best sort of statistical comparison I can think of is George Hill. He sort of hit some threes. He'll get some assists, but not many. He'll score a little bit. He'll be good defensively, and will translate into a few steals. He'll be relatively efficient, but not super efficient. I think that's who he looks to be, and which is fine, but it's not fantastic. And not George Hill of last, the second half of last season when he was a top 40 guy. I'm talking about George Hill when Paul George is playing with him.
Right. I don't know. You know, it's just, you look at his build too, and it's like, okay, you're either gonna crap out at, I don't want to. He should be awesome with how big of, how much length he has, how much reach he has. I think I'm just, you know what, we're trying to evaluate a guy from the stuff that he did a year ago, and we're not able to watch him right now and know how he's developing as he's coming back from rehab too. So I think there's just so much unknown that you almost go with the healthy guy here.
What about a hypothetical if the Jazz bring in Jeff Teague on Thursday at the trade deadline and Exum gets to play behind him for the next season and a half and develop and learn behind Teague? Does that change your opinions?
My understanding is from what I've heard that the Jazz are hesitant to bring someone in because they like Exum so much. And they think that we don't need to spend assets to get someone because, you know, Haywood is, and Hood and Burks are doing it now, but it's, Exum's going to be that good for us.
I think there's a difference between not wanting to trade Exum because you're getting Jeff Teague back and not wanting to trade Exum because you think that Exum's going to be awesome. Like, I just don't think Jeff Teague moves the needle enough to say that, like if they're going to trade Exum right now, they're hoping Exum can develop into a good enough player that he's the point guard of a championship team eventually. Jeff Teague, you don't look at and say, oh, you know, that guy's going to lead a championship team someday.
All right, well, that's our player comparison debate done. Let's talk about players who have been drafted and haven't come over into the NBA yet. There's a few names that we need to throw out there because sometimes these guys might be floating on a waiver wire. Because we haven't seen them play, people might be a little bit willing to give them up for less. Kyle, you got some names for us?
Dario Saric from the Philadelphia 76ers. Everything we've heard this season is that he is absolutely coming over next year, even though it would be financially better for him to wait another year after next year. So Sarge is going to come over. He's a small forward, power forward hybrid. He's like 6'9", 6'10". The kid's going to play like freaking LeBron when he comes over here. Like, that's the kind of diverse stat set you're going to get out of him. The fact that Philadelphia – sorry, I'm going to rage for a second. The fact that Philadelphia drafted Jahlil Okafor when they already have Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel – who are, they have to play center in today's NBA. So now you got three centers. You got Dario Saric coming over, who should be your power forward, who's going to stretch it out for you and also help facilitate. That also allows you to use some of the other guys that you got on the team to help plan for the future as far as your wing guys at shooting guard and small forward, whether you actually believe in the potential for Stauskas and Covington to be consistent guys going forward on a winning team. Anyways, just frustrates me so much that Dario Saric is going to be awesome. I'm just a little bit worried that he's going to get pigeonholed at small forward when his best position is going to be power forward.
Yeah, look, him at power forward and Nerlens Noel at center would be fantastic to watch because Saric can distribute the ball, you know, feed Noel in there. Noel covers up a lot of the defensive issues, but you know, there's just so many big men. There's four guys to play two positions. You know, Saric, Embiid, Okafor and Noel, and that's, you know, and three of them should all be playing center, really. But yeah, you know, they're going to have to try and find minutes for some of them. Like, they're trying Okafor there now. Noel's been playing there. They might even put Embiid there at power forward, and it's not an ideal mix of players. I'm sure they'd love to get fair value for one of them back in a trade to try and get some smaller guys in this team. Matt, you got some other names for us?
Yeah, just as a Suns fan, the guy I'm keeping my eye on from a dynasty point of view is Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's currently playing in Turkey. He was drafted at pick 27 in the 2014 draft by the Suns. He's won the EuroLeague Rising Star Award twice in a row. Who was the only other player to do that, Josh and Kyle?
Nikola Mirotic.
Yep.
Boom, Nikola Mirotic. Well done. Bogdanovic has also played in the World Cup for Spain, so he's got some good international experience there. Still only 23 years old, so there's no word yet as to whether he will come over next season, but he's one to keep an eye on.
I thought that he was. I thought I heard that he was coming over.
Okay. Haven't heard that, but you might be right.
Just another,
usually are, Josh.
Yeah. Just another shooting guard, small forward to add into the mix with Booker and Bledsoe and Knight.
Okay, but Bogdan Bogdanovic, how is he different than Bojan Bogdanovic, who has just sucked?
He's got his butt.
His Bogdan's spelled with a G.
He's got a G in there, yeah.
So he's a gangster, so.
Exactly. Okay. He's also got a D as well, so we all know that you enjoy the D, Kyle. So that's just something to add into his profile. I'm glad you're laughing at that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's Detroit basketball or
it's whatever you want it
defense.
To be. It's
something more flaccid.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Josh, who do you got? Who are you looking at? You asked us, and I want to know who's like on the tip of your tongue from foreign players who have already been drafted.
Tomas Satoransky, who was drafted by the Washington Wizards a few seasons ago. You probably would have heard me on the Dynasty League podcast, the 4.5-hour monstrosity that me and Mark Roberts did earlier in the season. He was a guy that I was really keen to get. I had him on my draft queue, which I'd broadcast to everyone, including the people in the draft, so they snatched him up and outbidded me for him, so that was beautiful. But he's a guy that I think can be fantastic. Now, with Bradley Beal suffering injuries and constantly having these leg problems, I was a bit worried about Satoransky's value because he's going to have to play behind Beal. But the more that happens with Beal, the more you think, can this guy actually stay healthy? Can he actually ever realize his full potential? Because Satoransky can do stuff that Beal does. He's one of those new breeds of shooting guards who can shoot, but can give you 3-4 assists as well and handle the ball. And he's flashy. He's sort of a Mario Hezonja-ish type of confidence-based player. A little bit smaller than him, but I really like what Satoransky could do. Now, I don't know if he's going to come across. He's currently playing, I think, in Spain. He's from Barcelona. He's from the Czech Republic. He's a guy that I'm really keen to see. Now, he is 24 years of age, but I think that we're going to see him in the next 2 seasons.
That's the thing about some of these 24-year-old guys who come into the NBA after a few years of college or after playing overseas. Like, the cool thing about them is they can step in and they can take on a larger role much more quickly than you see some of the younger rookies. So, I don't know. And Satoransky, if there's one thing that's intriguing to me, at 6'7", if they really wanted to, they could play him at small forward. If they could theoretically play Beal at small forward with him at shooting guard.
He's averaging 4.3 assists in Europe this year as a shooting guard in 23 minutes. Like, that's pretty impressive numbers for a guy who... And it's not like Beal can handle the ball as well, but the Wizards don't really have many other guys who can make play. Like, they don't have ball hand, like their bench. Like, there's crap like Gary Neal and Ramon Sessions there. They don't have someone else who's a real ball handler, and he can be that guy. And I'm sure he'd start off doing that in the second unit, but he can be that guy who can distribute and can play mixed in with John Wall and play on the bench and lead the second unit as well. I reckon I'm really excited for him to come across. A couple of other names we had listed down here. One of the ones I had down is the New York Knicks and Willy Hernan Gomez, who played with Kristaps last season over in Seville. I know Kristaps is really keen on getting him across, and apparently he's coming over this season, a big 7-foot center who, they've got Robin Lopez, but I think that they'll be looking for Hernan Gomez to be that guy in a couple of seasons to really start to, well, even just a backup behind Kristaps as well. He's a really interesting player to me. Any other names you want to throw out there without getting too much into detail?
I guess I would just say Seti Osman from the Cleveland Cavaliers, drafting him, I think, with like the 31st or 33rd pick this year. He's 6'8". He's got a terrific game. It's all around. He's going to be able to do everything. It's really interesting, and I hope Cleveland brings him over sooner than later, because I want to see him play with LeBron while LeBron's still awesome. Consistently awesome. Milos Teodosic, I doubt he ever comes over here, but if he does, he would be amazing.
Who's got his
those
rights?
Are the only two guys who really stand out to me. Sergio Lowell, maybe. I was hoping Sergio Lowell would have came over this last year, so we could have seen Lowell start next to James Harden, because Lowell would be perfect playing next to James Harden, because he's kind of a hybrid guard, the same way that James Harden is.
Yep, if you ever watch the Sergio Yu YouTube clips, some of the shots that he makes are crazy. Like, he hits like shots falling down. He's a point guard, but he's a shooter as well. He can do a lot of things. But I don't
is the first L, is that silent? I like being more smarter than.
Well, I've heard it pronounced in two different ways. It was Yule and Yui. It was the other way I heard it pronounced. I don't really know which one's correct. But
either way, I was wrong.
Hey, I think we're all probably wrong when we look at it.
Kyle, did you know that Josh has got a silent L at the start of his name as well?
Yeah, Yoid.
What?
Yeah, Josh Yoid. The double L. It's my Spanish heritage.
Do you really not pronounce
No, I do. No.
First,
Okay. No, I do. I'm not. I have no Spanish. No Spanish heritage whatsoever. No silent L's happening here.
I can see a little Gasol in you.
Yeah, I've had that before. Actually, I've had a couple of people mention that. I'm still waiting on my Marcus Ole jersey to arrive, actually, just so I can really confuse the locals around here. Hasn't helped. I'm I'm 1 foot shorter than him, so wouldn't probably get recognized out in the street. But I'm still waiting on that that jersey to arrive. Matt, you got any other names you want to throw out there?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Cool. All right, dynasty startup next season. You got to pick your players, obviously, and it can be done. Someone send us a question, what's your preferred dynasty format? So I'll just quickly throw that out there. Mine is a head-to-head league. It doesn't really matter if it's 8 or 9 cat, because if it's turnovers, I don't care about them anyway. My main issue with turnovers, and a lot of people go, Josh, I know you hate turnovers, and I do. I hate them in a 9 cat roto setting where they're just going to have a real impact on things. In a head-to-head league, I don't care if they're there. They're fine to break a tie break, whatever. But I'm just not going to care about them. What's your preferred setting? Do you like head-to-head? Do you like roto? How do you prefer to set up a dynasty league, Matt?
I still do like the roto format. I'm a bit of a roto guy, but the one thing I will say about redraft leagues to dynasty leagues, I'm more of a snake guy for redraft leagues, but I think especially for a dynasty league, if you're starting from scratch, the fairest way to do it is an option draft. You can't just go,
has to be.
Here you go, 1-12, this is your draft order. It must be fair to start off with, so everyone's gotten an even shot at getting Steph Curry or Carl Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis or whoever you want.
Kyle, do you have a preference of the way you want to set it up?
Always 8-cat for head-to-head, because turnovers as a tiebreaker is absurd, because essentially you're telling me I'm going to lose because I have the best players on my team for that category. But rotisserie, I love having turnovers, because everybody is forced to care about turnovers in that league setting. So I like that. If you're doing a dynasty league, I like to do head-to-head, 8-cat, and I like to do salary cap league, but not using the actual salaries. I just do an auction, and yep, you've got a certain amount of money you need to stay under.
Best way.
And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the best way. That's the way that the Red Rock dynasty league is set up. We've got contract lengths and stuff in there, but it's the best to have salaries and also have some sort of penalty to a degree of, like, you know, maybe increasing salaries and stuff like that. It really adds an extra layer. But we're talking about starting up a dynasty league. That's our preferred setup for it. But Kyle, who are your top five guys if you're starting a dynasty league next year, assuming that it's a head-to-head league, you know, based on what you've just said that your preference is? Who are your top five guys?
I hope this isn't a shocker. I'm taking Carl Anthony Towns first next year.
It's not. It's not a shocker. It sounds stupid, but it's really not. Like, it's just, he is that good.
Go look at his across the board stats. He's going to be an elite shot blocker, an elite scoring guy, an elite rebounder. Guess what? He already is. In the last month of the season, he's been the top. He's like the number five guy so far this season. He's like top eight, isn't he? Like already.
10th in 9 cut legs.
Yep, he's 18th in 8 cut.
And he can only, I mean, that's in 30
minutes.
Season,
yeah, that's
so
in 30 minutes.
Most players get better after their rookie season. Granted, all don't. We've seen OJ Mayo. But there's just so much upside with Carl Anthony Towns, especially considering how out of this world tremendous his field goal percentage and free throw percentage are right now. So, and you just, you know, he won the skills competition, so you're thinking, well, maybe we're going to get some assists out of him and more three-pointers going forward, yada, yada. But top five, Carl Anthony Towns, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and I took a long time thinking about the fifth one, but I ended up settling on James Harden, despite how frustrating he can be in some respects.
It's very hard to argue with any of that, Kyle. Matt, what would your top five be?
I've gone slightly different with the top two. I'm going to stick with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. I think we spoke a little bit before about your strategy, and I think Josh, you said you can't think longer than 2 years in advance. With Curry and Durant, they're giving you that instant chance to win next season, the season after that, probably a 3 to 4 season window. I'm not saying Carl Anthony Towns, you can't. You might have to wait a season or two, but Curry and Durant are going to give you that instant shot at winning in the next 3 to 4 years. So I've got them 1 and 2. I've got Carl Anthony Towns at 3, above Anthony Davis. I thought long and hard about that as well. But going back to some of what Kyle said, Towns is a top 10 player in 9 cat leagues already. top five over the last month. Still only playing 30 minutes of games. Doesn't have these durability concerns that Davis does, especially if we're talking in head-to-head legs. And their per 36 numbers are already very, very close. Cat's more efficient, making more threes, getting more rebounds. Davis has that scoring advantage just one point per game or thereabouts. So Towns are three, Davis are four. Five, it could have been Harden, could have been Westbrook. I've gone with Kawhi Leonard, a couple of years younger, and then also for those defensive stats. Scoring's going through the roof, and the Spurs, they're his team now. So Kawhi Leonard at number five for me.
Yeah, it's all that stuff you bring up is, and I tend to agree with you, Matt, about Towns. There's no problem with taking him one, but I think if you want to win it next season, I think that you have Curry at one. But we talk about can't predict into the future. I'll predict into the future. Carl Anthony Towns is going to be a top five guy, barring injury, for the next 10 years. I've got zero doubt that that's going to be the case. He will be a top five guy for the next 10 years. He might not be number one, and sometimes the gap between number one and number five is significant. It can be the difference between the guy at number five and number 25. That's how big that gap can be. So saying a guy's top five, it's not like, oh, well, he's top five, he's not number one. That can be a significant difference. Like Steph Curry could be double the value of the guy who's sitting at number five, which if I had a look at what it is this season, yeah, so the guy who's sitting at number five this season is Kyle Lowry, and his Z score in eight category leagues is 0.86. Steph Curry's is 1.75. So Steph Curry's value to your team is double what the fifth ranked player is. That's how big. Now, Curry probably won't have a season where he hits, he does everything that he's doing this season again, because this is potentially the greatest season that anyone's ever had ever. So for him to back that up might be tough.
But because Kevin Durant's going to steal all the shots next year.
That's the next thing I was going to get to. What happens if they team up, that one and two? Then if that happens, then I would definitely go a different direction at one. But I would take Curry at one. I'd be inclined to go with Towns at two, and I would take Durant at three. I'll take Davis at four, and then I would stick with what you did, Kyle, and go with Harden at five. Because look, these guys are not old. They're not young. Like Curry is 27. Durant's the same sort of age. They're not old, but they're not 20 like Carl Anthony Towns is. So you're going to get two or three seasons at this similar level, and then they start to decline, which takes me into the next question. When you're looking at players and looking at players who are in their career arc, where do you look at a guy in terms of age and go, well, that's it, we've seen the best from him? Where's the decline start, Kyle? Where do you look at a player and go, well, he's reached this age, that's it for me. He's on the way down.
In general, I think most players by age 30 are going to be kind of on a steady downward trend. But then again, you see guys like Tim Duncan who find a way to have a resurgence, or Pau Gasol who he's had his like two most dominant seasons the last two seasons at age 33, 34. I believe he's at still. So it's hard to put something too ardent, but in general, I usually think 30 and beyond is kind of when you're on your downward trend.
Well, there's always going to be guys that do things oddly. Like your mate Marvin Williams is having his best season. He's 29, and he's not a good player by any stretch, but this is by far his best season that he's ever had. And it's not like he's had a big sudden rise in his minutes. He's playing 29 minutes this year. The last few seasons, 26, 25, 24, 26, 29. But I think
he's taking advantage of the fact that it's a leap year, so he's doing things that are a little bit, out of sort. That wasn't really funny. I'm sorry. Marvin Williams sucks. He's shooting out of his mind right now. It's gonna come back down to earth. Don't believe it.
I haven't believed it. He's shooting over the last 2 weeks, Kyle, 61% from the field. That is so un-Marvin Williams. Like I don't understand where this is coming from him. He's shooting 87% from the free throw line this year. 87. He's just anyway. I don't want to devolve into a Marvin Williams discussion, but there are guys who head to that age and do produce seasons out of the blue. Matt, when you're looking at players, where do you see and go, well, this is in general the area that I'm start to be a little bit worried?
Yeah, I agree with Kyle. 30 is the age for me. I haven't done any analysis around it, but it's just the general feeling that once they get to 30, you think they're going to be on that decline. So guys at the moment, sort of your Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, Bosch, Al Horford, Paul Millsap, sort of these guys who are around that 29, 30, 31 age, you think they're going to slowly start to decline off. So, yeah, 30 for me.
And following on from that, what's like a cutoff age that you sort of look at when you go, okay, well, this guy's been in the league and he's this old now, it's just he's not going to get better. As I mentioned, there are outliers, but at what age do you say this is who he is? Matt?
Oh, me? For me, it's about 24, 25 as they're starting to come into their prime. We look at some of the guys now. Kawhi's 24, Cousins is 25, Draymond Green's 25. There's still a little bit of room for growth, but we generally now know what they're going to be and what level they're going to play at. Bradley Beal is like 22, but he's had a lot of injuries. We've still got some sort of idea on the player that he could be, but there's still growth there. So once again, it depends on when they've come into the league, their development, how early they get the court time, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, around that 24, 25, Andrade.
I mean, I think that's, when I was thinking about this question, I was waffling somewhere between 24 and 26 to say, after that, how many guys actually change up their game or become something else? And really, the only guy who I can think back to and say, okay, he became somebody who he wasn't initially is kind of Paul Millsap. Like he's kind of a bruiser, just getting rebounds, things like that. And then he became this all around, I get decent assists. I'm the prototypical power forward for today because I've got power with finesse. Realistically, more important to me than a guy's age, though, overall, is looking at their situation and saying, what has been their opportunity so far? Have they had plenty of minutes to play and try to show out what their production would be with a good amount of minutes? Have they played in a system that actually works for them? So when you look at a guy like Michael Carter-Williams, the fact that he's played in two places now and he's been relatively the same player, I don't have a lot of expectations for him going forward. Brandon Knight, can he be much more than what he is? I actually think he's kind of played above his head a little bit because he's been given a bigger role than what he should have been given. So you really just have to evaluate every guy based on what situation they've been in and what opportunities they've had and how they've capitalized on it, more so than what their age is. But in general, yeah, 24 to 26.
I think that's the range. Now, we were just talking about top fives. As we're recording this, had a question come in, a Dynasty Keeper related question. I'm going to throw it to you guys. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but I want to get it out there. Justin McLean asks the question. I've been offered Anthony Davis in exchange for Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns in a keeper league. We keep three, and I've already got Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green. Am I crazy to turn down Anthony Davis? Matt.
So he's got.
He's got Wiggins and Towns, and he's been offered Anthony Davis in exchange. But he can't keep both Wiggins and Towns.
I would keep what you have and keep Towns, going back to my top five dynasty rankings where I had Towns over Davis. And I can actually say the same thing because I've just traded for Anthony Davis in our dynasty league. And I can tell you, Josh, just between you and I, that I actually sent the Karl Anthony Towns owner a message and said, would you do that trade? And he said no. So there's another example where an owner is taking Karl Anthony Towns over Anthony Davis already.
Yep. Kyle, I assume you're in the same boat.
Your next question on our, like, you know, Dynasty Roundtable list of stuff we're going to go over was, you know, if you're going to target going after one guy or a list of guys right now to trade for in Dynasty, who are you going to go after? The first guy on my list is Cat.
Yep.
So that's just where we're at. When you look at the fact that as a rookie, he's already shooting, what, 55%, 56% from the field or something like that? No, I'm sorry, 57? Again, that's over the last month. Regardless, it's just everything's off the charts with this guy. So I'm going to take whatever may come in the future and I'm with you. I'm not saying I'm trading away Steph Curry or Kevin Durant for Karl Anthony Towns, but I'm going to consider it.
Look, with what he said here, am I crazy? Like, no, not only do you get a boost in this season and getting Wiggins in there as well, who you're not going to keep, but Towns for AD, we all three of us had Towns over AD. And everyone was in love with Anthony Davis heading into the preseason. Every single person, he's the number one pick in a dynasty league, so things can change. Every single person had him as number one in redraft leagues, except for me. But things change. Yeah, and this could change. But right now, it's really, really hard to put up an argument saying that Davis is going to be. Look, Towns is doing things better than what Davis is this year, 3 years younger than him. And it's pretty incredible what he's, well, maybe not better than him, but he's doing things that Davis wasn't doing in his rookie year. And that's a big, big key.
If you compare their pre-All-Star stats, which I tweeted out about a week ago between Davis and Cat is so far in front. It's not even funny. 3 points per game and a couple of rebounds or whatever it was. It was a massive difference.
Yep. Oh, yeah, huge. You're talking about their rookie comparisons, yeah? Matt, are you still there? Yep, cool.
Yeah, rookie comparisons, correct.
All right, now let's move into this next question that Kyle already referenced. If you're out of the Dynasty playoffs, now you've got to start looking to acquire assets and start building your team. Which guys are you looking to trade for that you might take a leap next season? We don't know lots of things. We don't know the draft. We don't know what's happening with free agency. Who are some names that are on your list that you should be trying to acquire, Kyle?
We've already talked about most of these guys. Kat, Kristaps Porzingis, Dennis Schroeder, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Stanley Johnson, Miles Turner, D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, all of these guys. Anybody who has higher value than what they've played at the majority of the season right now, which means that their season-long rank is going to be a little bit depressed. You look at the fact that Nerlens Noel over the last month is like a top 10 guy, whereas over the course of the season, I'm sure he's a lot lower in the rankings. I don't have it on me right now, but
I'll tell you, I just get what I'm, asked him.
Get
he's
what I'm,
he's
what
at
I'm
47,
saying.
Yeah.
You look for those guys who are going to do better going forward.
Matt, what other names you got to throw into that mix?
Yeah, I had all of those guys. I also had someone like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the Nets, Alex Len with the Suns. I'm also interested in this Boston front court, not only, well, especially now coming up to the trade deadline, but then what happens next season with guys like Kelly Olynyk or Jared Sullinger, because if they get in the right situation and can play, you know, 30 to 34 minutes a night, their value, fantasy value, could take a pretty big leap. So, yeah, watch those guys in the Boston front court as well.
The other names to keep an eye on to me, Victor Oladipo, who's had a real down start to the season, and I think that he will be better. Yes, there's trade rumors going around with him, but he will be better moving forward the rest of this season and next season. And a couple of Minnesota guys, Zach LaVine and Gorgui Dieng, who are playing well at the moment, but if Sam Mitchell goes and then puts Kevin Garnett and Nikola Pekovic back into the rotation, if he puts Kevin Martin back into the rotation, then Jeng's going to go back down to 26 minutes, and LaVine is going to go back down to 26 minutes, and that's going to suppress their value. It's the wrong thing to do, but Mitchell will probably do it, and you know that Garnett's going to get his 12 minutes, so it's going to have to come off Jeng's playing time. And yes, he's averaging 40 minutes a game at the moment. It's going to have to come down, but it's going to limit him. People go, oh, he's back to this. He's a guy to be acquiring, and LaVine as well. These are guys who are going to have much bigger roles heading into next season when these other players like Kevin Martin and maybe Nikola Pekovic, yeah, and maybe Kevin Garnett aren't there. So there's some other names that I throw out there. Oladipo, LaVine, and Gorgui Dieng in Minnesota. Not many other guys that I can really look at. Yusuf Nurkic has had a bit of a disappointing season. His value is probably as low as it's going to get. He's a guy that I'd be targeting as well, because as good as Nikola Jokic has been, and I love Jokic, Nurkic can be almost as impactful if he's fully fit and healthy and playing. And with the Nuggets likely to move on from a few of their guys, like Darrell Arthur's there, Kenneth Faried's not going to be a long-term solution for Denver. And Nurkic and Jokic, I would love to see them work in the front court together, but there's always possibilities of trades as well. But Nurkic is a guy whose value is probably as low as it's going to be over the next 3 or 4 seasons.
Jerry and Grant from the Knicks as well, Josh?
Yep. Yeah, and another guy who's way, way down is Dillon Wright in Toronto. I reckon he can provide something, but that's a real deep cut. You're going to have to wait probably 3 or 4 years for that to yield any fruit. But Jerian Grant's an interesting one for the next year, or rest of this season and next season. As ahead of him, Langston Galloway and Jose Calderon aren't exactly fantastic players, where Grant's got an opportunity to be a real good contributor.
I'm sure Josh has been saying this all year, but this is a special rookie class this season.
It's the
best rookie class since 2003, so I know we get deep and we talk optimistically about so many guys from this draft class. It's just legit. Like, there's just that many guys who are going to be consistent starters in this league from this draft class. And I think I could make an argument easily for like 6 potential all-stars, if not more.
Yeah, well, who would that be? Towns, Porzingis, obviously. Russell, Okafor, Johnson,
Booker,
Turner, Booker, Jesus.
I don't. I don't think Okafor is even necessarily in my top six. If you're going to go top six, it's Cat, Kristaps, Stanley Johnson, and look, if you watched enough Pistons games, you'd be on board with me with this. Like, there's just rare moments where, and it's not even rare, there's enough moments where, whatever, Stanley Johnson's going to be a freaking MVP. Miles Turner, D'Angelo Russell, those are probably my top five. Well, right off the top of my head.
If you look at the last four picks of the first round of this draft, Larry Nance, who's, I think, surprised all of us with his level of play, and he makes you go, well, you know, this guy can actually play, like he can be a rotation player, and not many players at pick 27 can be that. 28, RJ Hunter. Yeah, he's got a role in the NBA. Number 29, Chris McCullough from the Brooklyn Nets, who's just come back after ACL surgery, would have been picked probably 10 spots higher if he hadn't been coming off ACL surgery. And number 30, a guy who is a massive steal, I reckon, and might not get playing time, but Kevon Looney for the Golden State Warriors. These are all guys who can legitimately play and be rotation pieces in the league relatively soon. And that's the last four picks. Out of the first round, you look at the first round guys, the only guys I look at and go, oh, maybe not, Jarrell Martin from the Grizzlies. I look at Sam Decker and go, okay, well, we haven't seen him. He's been injured, but I'm a bit worried about him. And you haven't seen anything out of Terry Rozier either, but Terry Rozier can play. Like, it's been real good.
Isn't Terry Rozier like 5'11"?
He's not big. Yeah, and I don't see, like, he's got to play behind Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Evan Turner's getting minutes there, Marcus Smart. There's just so many, RJ Hunter as well. It's a weird one, but hey, you never know how that's going to play out. Maybe he's just an asset that gets traded somewhere and, you know, ends up, you know, putting up a decent role. But he's one of the guys in that first round. I'm a little bit like, oh, maybe he's not going to be a rotation level player. But otherwise, the rest of that first round.
We haven't even mentioned Moutier yet.
Oh, I know.
And like, Willie Cauley-Stein has been better than what I thought he would be.
I agree.
I still don't necessarily think he's going to be great. Frank Kaminsky, he's older, so you're expecting more from him. But he's still intriguing, and he's more mobile than what I thought he would look like in the NBA.
What about Trey Lyles?
Exactly. Okay. What about Trey Lyles?
He looks like he can do everything. He looks really good. Like, these are guys that you normally look at pick 12 in the draft and they don't amount to anything. Like, Trey Lyles was picked 12 and Devin Booker was picked after him and Cameron Payne was picked after him. And these are guys that are gonna be players.
Rashad Vaughn has great size for playing shooting guard or small forward. Granted, probably better at shooting guard, but he's 6'7".
I'm glad.
What about Kelly Oubre, Wizards?
Yeah, I'm a bit off on him. I think he's all right, but I'm not as convinced with him, Kyle.
I don't think Oubre's going to put it all together. I think he's going to be at best Gerald Green, like, or that kind of player where he kind of flounders for a long time. He's never consistent enough to be a regular part of the rotation. And then eventually he finds a niche and he latches onto a couple of teams and he has a couple of decent seasons. But other than that, I don't think Kelly Oubre is going to become too great. Justin Anderson, though, his defense alone, he might end up being a regular guy.
Tyus Jones is going to be awesome.
I
agree. Yeah. I really like Tyus Jones. There's so many guys in this draft class, which is going to bring me into the next part or the last part of the show. But before I do that, I'm glad that you guys said that about this draft class because I obviously went to Summer League and I saw all these guys play. And I sometimes think, am I just romanticizing the experience of going over there and seeing all these guys and going, oh, I think this guy's good. But they're actually legitimately good. It's not just me going, they're good because I saw them. Yeah, because I went over there and, you know, it was the first experience I had at Summer League and thinking, oh, shit, these guys are actually good. But they are actually good. I just got lucky to see every one of these guys basically play. And, you know, when they started out. So it's good to hear another perspective on that as well. To finish off the...
Joe Young was drafted 43rd.
There's another guy in that second round who is going to be a decent player as well. Rashawn Holmes from the Sixers. He can do a lot. And look, Josh Richardson's in that second round. Norman Powell from the Raptors I like a lot. There are guys here who are, you know, who are Seti Osman, who you mentioned before, Kyle, pick at 31. There's a couple of guys who are crap, but there's a number of guys who are very interesting here. Now, what we're going to do to finish off the podcast is look through this 2015 draft that we've just been talking about and sort of redrafted from a dynasty point of view, how you would pick, just if you're picking the rookies, what order would you pick them in? Well, let's get out of the way. Karl-Anthony Towns is number one. I don't think we've got any doubt about that.
Matt, Stanley Johnson.
Okay, cool. You can have Stanley Johnson at number one. Me and Matt, we'll take Karl-Anthony Towns at one. You take Johnson at one. That's fine. But, okay, we'll put Towns up there at one. Kyle, I know you're not happy with that. He's at one. We'll just go around rapid fire. Matt, Kyle, me, go through the picks and see which order we go. Matt, you get number two. Go for it.
Porzingis.
Kyle.
I'm sorry. 2 seconds. Because I don't want to be such an ardent like butthole about it. I had this pulled up. I was marinating on Rishon Holmes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Stanley Johnson goes three.
Okay. At four. I think I'd take Russell. Matt?
6 seconds, Matt.
Porzingis.
Okay, thank God.
Just on Porzingis, he's already a top 40 player this year in his rookie season, just what Josh is thinking.
We haven't.
He's so awesome.
I made my pick. Did you not hear my pick?
No, sorry.
I picked out. I picked D'Angelo Russell, but I'm not happy about it.
So Russell's at four, so then I'll take Miles Turner at five.
That's who I was debating.
Nice. I'm so glad you said that. Sugar plums. Oh my God, I wouldn't have said this like even probably 2 weeks ago. I think I got to go with Devin Booker.
Ooh, nice.
I think I don't like it, but I think I have to take Okafor because I'm getting him at pick seven. Yeah. I think at pick seven, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, and I had Okafor and Booker right there as well. So you two guys have pinched who I would have taken.
This is not from a fantasy perspective, right?
Yeah, no, it is.
Yes, it is.
Do you want to redo it?
No, that's fine.
What time is it they call?
It's 12:42. It's all right, dude. I sit up every night doing 8 balls of coke, so I'm fine.
My next two I'm tossing up between a point guards, Moutier or Cameron Payne. I'm gonna go with Moutier because he's got more guaranteed playing time in the next couple of years. We spoke about Cameron Payne sitting behind Russell Westbrook, so I'm gonna take I'll take Moutier.
You just got to take that size that you get on a Moutier too, a 6'5 point guard with that great wingspan. Like you're getting a young guy who is committed on defense and who shows such tremendous upside on offense. All right, so you said Moutier, biscuits. I think I would go Justice Winslow after this. Do that.
Now.
I just want Justice Winslow's defense. Like, when you're looking at can't miss right there, I want Justice Winslow's defense. And I think that's going to ensure his role going forward.
Speaking of defense, I'm going to take Rondo Hollis Jefferson. And we'll make this the last round, Matt. We'll go through with your last pick.
Yep, okay. Because he's still there, and then this will be my long-term pick, my long-term stash, I'll take Cameron Payne.
Yeah, of course. Kyle, your last one?
I believe I'd go Trey Lyles.
Yeah, I believe that's a pretty good pick. And I will take, with the last pick, Mario Hezonja. All right, so that's us. How many do we go through there? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 guys. Yep, that's our top 13 dynasty rookies from last year. And look, we did not even draft Willie Cauley-Stein. We didn't take Frank Kaminsky. We didn't take Jerian Grant. We didn't take Bobby Portis. We didn't take
Frank
Cauley-Stein.
We didn't take Larry Nance, who's been fantasy relevant in redraft leagues this season alone. We didn't take Joe Young. There's just so many guys in this draft. So
I don't think we took Hezonja, did we?
Yeah, I just took him with the last pick.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah, because at pick 13, I was pretty happy. That just shows the depth of this class. Now, next year's class apparently is not supposed to be as good, but we heard the same thing about this draft compared with the year before. It was always said, yeah, it's not as much star power, maybe a bit more depth, but the players in this draft are easily surpassing what the guys from 2014 did. So we don't really know. there might be the case next year as well, but it's going to be really tough to add up or to match up to a draft that, you know, is considered one of the best since when did you say, Cole? 2003. So, you know, in the last 15 years, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, since the Darko draft. Yep.
The Darko draft. Yeah, as a Pistons fan, I'm sure that's how you remember it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you
guys
want to
add? No.
Anything else we need to add before we wrap this one up?
Can I just quickly plug my writing a playoff schedule analysis right now for all our Basketball Monster subscribers? That'll be out in the next few days, hopefully. And then also my trade deadline live chat on Basketball Monster for, once again, all our subscribers. That'll be happening live Thursday afternoon when it happens Friday morning here in Australia. So more details will come out about that on the big Basketball Monster website and via Twitter at S-Man Sports. So stay tuned for that.
And I'll be doing a recap podcast of the trade deadline after it happens, and we'll be doing some sort of article on the Basketball Monster website as well. Kyle, you do your weekly waiver wire piece over on the site, and always chiming in with great analysis in the player comments section. What else have you guys got? Anything else to plug? Give us your Twitter handles, Matt.
Twitter handle.
I forgot my name for a second. Sorry.
Mine's at S-Man Sports. You can follow me over there. Kyle's is Kyle _ Stanley Johnson _ basketball.
You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. Josh, do you ever record a podcast when it's not a full moon?
When it's not, it's always a full moon over here, Kyle. That's the way it works. We've got two suns and a constant full moon.
Okay.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeball and the Twitter account of Basketball Monster, which I encourage you all to follow if you're not already, which I'm sure you are, is at BaskMonster, with all the late-breaking updates and news items and podcasts and articles and all that sort of stuff gets tweeted out on that account as well. Make sure you're following me on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is at RedRock_Beeball and Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. Make sure you're checking out the sponsors SeatGeek and using that promo code RedRock and subscribing to this podcast on iTunes. It goes a very long way to helping the show grow. Thank you to everyone who has done that so far. And if you haven't, check out the interview with Joe Ingles that I did across the weekend. I do encourage you. I think it turned out pretty well. Not sure if either of you guys have listened to it yet.
I actually, my favorite part of the interview was when Joe Ingles endorsed Bernie Sanders for president.
Just I haven't had much political talk on this podcast, Kyle, so good to get a little bit of that in. I'm sure that goes over fantastically well. Guys, anything else to add?
I want to play Joe Ingles on FIFA.
Oh, yes. He was throwing some shade out there because it's Trent Copeland who put it out there that Joe was a bad FIFA player, and Joe definitely counted that he was clearly the superior FIFA player. So I would like to have a crack at him. I'm no good, but hey, maybe I'll give him a challenge.
We should play him on NBA 2K16 or something.
I'll see if I can set it up. All right, guys, we are done. Matt, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Kyle.
Kyle, thank you for staying up past your bedtime. Get back to those piles and piles of Coke on your dining table.
Oh, I love you guys. Happy Valentine's Day, you little turkeys.
Yes, I completely forgot about that, considering that was basically 24 hours ago for us. Forgot it's still Valentine's Day over there, so happy Valentine's Day to you too. Kyle, we are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.